The Millennial Express, plowing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2023. I am now here with Red Ice, that is the American-Swedish content powerhouse, as I've described them, of Henrik Palmgren and Lana Loktiv. Welcome back to Millennial.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a while. What, a couple of years? I mean,
were we on the last one? No, we were on the last one. Or was it me?
I think it was just you because Sigrid was born and came a little early. And so there was that.
Yeah. I can tell you. I can tell you the years that you've appeared. Hold on a second. If you want to be autistic.
Yes.
Yes, I do. Hold on to the autism.
Yeah, you were on 2016 as well, but separately. Then 2017, 18, 19, and then not until 22.
So 2 years ago.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, there was a gap of 2 years. Yeah.
Moving, heart problems, you know, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, the fun stuff.
Yeah.
So I think last year was quite a depressing year, especially in Europe. But this year has been much more, certainly at the end of it now, there's a real good feeling, a sort of optimism. There was a similar thing at the end of 2019 as well, a sense of a new decade about to approach, but then things went south with COVID and so on. This year has had a succession of things. So would you like to take it away with what was the, early on? What were the first things that made you think, that gave you a good feeling this year?
When did Elon buy Twitter again? Was it earlier this year?
Yeah, in the spring. I believe it was the spring.
Well, that was when it started. He bought it, I think, October last year, round about then.
Okay, yeah.
And it really started to take effect slowly throughout this year.
And it's not that it's that the thing that people are like, oh, shit, you're going to do that. But I don't trust these people. And who knows? They're not our champions. They're not going to fix things for us. But the point is, why I'm bringing up is that it was like a cascading events, you know, that kind of happened after that point, it felt like, right, with the kind of attacks on him. And it feels like he's genuinely, you know, was
waking
interested in
things.
like seeing things and retweeting things. You know, he's a big name. He got a, you know, got a lot of stuff out there. And then this has just rolled on. It hasn't stopped, right, with the ADL. That thing was going. He's suing Media Matters. Now it's, you know, he brings up immigration and like
and demographics,
Jewish organizations and stuff. And so those are positive things. These guys are not going to save any of us, and we shouldn't, you know, perceive it as that. But when a lot of these people are like going in this direction, and even that Charlie Kirk is bringing up, you know, white attacks. He's talking about also about, you know, NGOs and Jewish liberal organizations and things like that, and immigration and, you know, kind of, the situation in Israel really kind of brought about some of this, right? It caused a huge rift and a split. But, man, I think that we should be, like, you know, collectively speaking, pat ourselves on the back here because we've been driving some of these talking points for, you know, 10 years.
That's
some of,
right.
Some, even more, two decades, some people. Right?
Yeah.
And now it's like in the mainstream.
It can't hurt to have people could say whatever they want about Elon. But at the end of the day, it can't hurt to have the richest man in the world talking about demographics, banned ADL, reinstating people's Twitter accounts. And there actually is, I feel like we can have more real discussion and people are becoming more open and available to real discussion. People are less afraid of these untouchable labels like white supremacist and racist and all that. I feel like there is more of that kind of normie conservative crowd that is coming in our direction as we predicted. And I think that that's happening with conversations of the ADL and who's behind immigration and who's behind censorship and what happens when white people are a minority. We're talking about, you know, anti-whiteness out in the open. All kinds of Twitter accounts are pointing out the truth also about, you know, black on white crime. A lot of that was discussed this year. And all of these are important. We have to start with discussion and awareness of these things before it can build into, you know, political movements to do something about it. right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there seems to be a technical error that it's not showing up on Odyssey. So I'm just trying to sort that out because the
Odyssey.
The link, apparently it's going through to the No Chance stream that I just did. So I don't know. It's a technical thing. I'll try to sort it out while we talk.
You got to like create a new one, I think, or something, right?
I might have to do that.
Yeah, which is a bummer, but
yeah.
Well, Alt Tech, that's another good place, right? We have Locals, we have Rumble. I feel like that stuff's taking off more too. Like there's more options opening up, and I think it's only going to be more, you know, going forward.
I mean, look at what Access Allowed. Go ahead, Woz.
Yeah, I have the same feeling, and especially because of Substack. But now Substack never called itself Alt Tech. And I think that label might be falling away to some extent because it attracts attention. But what seems to be happening instead is just a renewed belief in freedom of speech. Now, I think, and I said this in the intro stream for Millennial, I think that we have, and I may be wrong, but I think that we have passed the peak, I think that censorship has peaked. What would you two say about that?
I think you're right. I think censorship has peaked because they realize they cannot do anything about it. It's a long game, right? So we'll see what happens with X or Twitter, and that's going to be interesting. The study, the lawsuits, the advertisement, boycott.
His government contracts, what happens there?
Right. Yeah. There's things like that. However, I say this, though, where they might not succeed in censorship, they will commence with like imprisonment, charging people like legally. And
that's
shit.
Bold, though. That's
well, I
bold.
Mean, look at J6 and all. I mean, that's already started. And as usual, they start from the top. Like, look at these frivolous lawsuits against Trump and stuff like that, right? And that would probably just kind of descend down. As what I'm saying is, as they begin to panic more and more, as they cannot control the narrative, more this stuff will get out there. More people, excuse me, we'll talk about this. I got a cough today. That will, you know, it's going there. It's unstoppable. They're not going to be able to stop it. And it's so they're going to turn to desperate, get even more desperate. Exactly.
Just well, like that, with, it's a bold move.
You know, they might just start killing us.
Well, they are.
Where I feel already, like they're really, the system's really exposing itself with all the anti-Israel sentiment where they just are just like raging and going nuts about that. Now they just want to ban all these people that are just like, yeah, I support, you know, not genociding Palestinians. I mean, that's a bold move when they're trying to write laws and push censorship like that. I think that's only going to create a worse backlash for them.
Yeah,
honestly, because then that's also affecting, yeah, you know, some liberals and all that. So.
Yeah. One other point here is, as you said, Elon Musk is not our savior. I don't know. And I don't think anyone. See, this is the thing. I don't think anyone's actually ever said that.
No. Well, there's some boomer like, I think didn't Charlie Kirk. He single handedly saved free speech or something. I'm not sure that makes him a savior. But yeah, I get your point.
I don't think it would be that much of an exaggeration to say that he saved free speech, to be honest.
Maybe Charlie, we'll see. We'll see.
Certainly with Twitter, that's a huge turnaround. But
yeah,
there are other, as I say, Substack was already there doing this thing. And there are other websites as well that we should not forget, like BitChute and Odyssey and Telegram, that have not been nearly as censorious as the powers that be wanted them to be. So that's all true. And we shouldn't forget that, even as Elon Musk has rejuvenated Twitter. But the thing is, as you say, that in itself is not enough. It's not going to save the West. But the discourse changing can only be good for us. And as you say, Henrik, it's sort of unstoppable. And remember that clip, of course you'll remember this, the clip that you use. I can't remember who it was, but the clip that you use in, the guy saying the truth will make you invincible, make you
it's a weapon denied to them because they're building their their worldview, their propaganda on lies.
Griffin.
So Edward Griffin, classical conspiracy. He's still alive, that guy, by the way.
Gotta get him.
I know.
I know he's still alive. It's bizarre. Yep.
Because that's from like the 60s or something like that, that clip.
It looks like from another, well, it
even
is from 50, another.
Yeah, I know, it looks like.
There's a similar one with the guy who did that advert against Barry Goldwater. And then he did a similar one, late 60s. And it was a famous party political broadcast or whatever against Goldwater. And And then he did a similar one against Trump like 50 years later.
Oh, really?
So
yeah. Weird. Very strange.
Like another lifetime. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a great clip that you use. And I think that it's easy to be too optimistic, sort of idealistic about like the truth will set you free. The truth is enough. Right. Yeah. It's not enough.
You have to
have power. You have to organize. Yeah. You have to have discipline and you have to have funding. But the truth is an extremely powerful weapon.
Yeah.
And as you say, they don't have it. They're lying about race. They're lying about sex. They're lying about trans. They're lying about Israel. They're lying about everything. I don't know.
Essentially,
a laundry list of things.
Yep. Essentially. Yep. That's how they do to drive the narrative and that we can always, you know, wield that sword against them. And we should use it as long as possible. Now, if you have to, you know, if you... I also don't think we should shy away from using, we don't have to lie, but I'm saying like running conspiracy. You don't always have to say what we want to do or achieve. Do what they did, like piecemeal things, set up goals, achieve small things, you know, just push in our direction a little bit, tippy toe tactic kind of against them a little bit, mm-hmm. like they've done to us. Now it's just a runaway train, essentially, because they know that they're, I think they're, for some reason, they're on a time table here, and they're losing out. They're pushing as hard as they can, as fast as they can before the window kind of closes on them, to be honest. That's what I think is going on. And so that, you know, Overton window has massively shifted, like, you know. Mm-hmm. This was, I mean, some of the things, like, openly talking about, like, you know, groups like Hias or the ADL in this kind of capacity just... 3-4 years ago with the kind of people that are doing it now was unthinkable, I think, to be honest.
And it is here, kind of frustrating because we all get banned for talking about those things. And now those people get to like talk about those things. But hey, we'll take it because at least that that information is getting out
Ben
there.
Ben Shapiro give us the honest view on the ADL. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
And then we continue to spearhead. You know, it's always that way, right? They're always like 10 years behind mm-hmm. and then they catch up.
So. Well, that's why, as I've said that too, now we have to drive like, normalize mass deportation.
Yes.
A lot of our countries and hammer that. That's the next level to things.
Repatriation. I'm not going to settle for anything
absolutely
else.
Absolutely not. And look at countries like, Christ, was it Afghanistan that were doing it? Or Pakistan? Maybe they were Afghanis in Pakistan. So it was.
God, I can't remember.
There's a lot of brown countries.
One were deporting another bunch of Stannies. Let's put it that
way. Essentially. And Germany's is like, we will take them. I was like, oh, God. Can you just go back to Afghanistan?
This brings us on to the farce, though. And I talked about this with Keith Woods, where they want to bring 2 million Palestinians to Europe, but at the same time, they want to deport anti-Semitic Palestinians.
It's incredible.
To where? And what are you going to do with these 2 million? I mean, it's just absolutely farcical.
Yeah, I know. But
cognitive dissonance, that they're like permanently in that state, you know?
Yeah. A very strange thing. I do agree that the thing is, things cannot go back now. You know, the clock can't be turned back. And it doesn't feel like it felt at the start of this year, or even the middle of this year. And yeah, there's disarray. We don't have institutions. We don't have organizations that are robust yet, or not enough of them, certainly. But things cannot go back. So we can only work from here. So that's great. You know, this is real progress mm-hmm. that I think has been made here. Now, some of it, has to be said, has really been done for us by Benjamin Netanyahu. weirdly. Now, obviously, I'm in Britain, so please be careful about what you say here. But what would you say about that? Because this is the key thing that I brought it up with Kevin MacDonald. He wasn't quite as upbeat about it as I am. I think that something has really fundamentally changed here. And again, the clock can't be turned back. You can't just return to 2021 or whatever.
Yeah. You mean with Netanyahu, like in terms of the war, his response, and then the kind of like domino effects of like, now, you know, we're seeing this on university campuses now, the recent drama with that stuff, right? Which is so bizarre. I think as long as we can also kind of help to weaponize that, because look at the collective response, right? Of, I mean, as far as I saw that whole situation, it was like, I don't know if there's any of these universities that actually had an, like, was there violence against Jewish students?
No.
I didn't see any of them. Maybe there is some of that, but I didn't see that. I
think they're not like attacking Jewish influence or power. They're just attacking the state of Israel.
Yeah,
Zionism.
Some flags
it's two different things
and stuff. They had basically pro-Palestine, marches and stuff, and they're freaking out about this. But the point is, people like Bill Ackman, right? He's like pulling $100 million, right, from like, was it Harvard or what? Maybe it was UPenn then or something like that. And there's lawsuits by a lot of these other, you know, activist kind of Jewish interest groups and things like this. And you can see how they're mobilizing just to try to control this. Again, I don't think it will work, to be honest. We'll see what happens. Again, it's too early to tell. I don't think this is going to pan out the way they think it will. But the point is, observe how organized they are to stand up for their own interest. And we should not, you know, it's kind of cringe sometimes. It's like, oh, look at the Zionists and we should be that. It's kind of, no. But I'm just saying in terms of looking out for our own interest, right? As you said, we need institutions. We need those kinds of groups. We need money. We need people, you know, like Musk. if he can wait, if he's sincere, great. If he's not, okay, too bad. But at least he's moving in our direction, right? But we need institutional money and people who come on our side, understand how dire the situation is, and make sure that we can start defending ourselves and begin, retaking, regaining some of the influence and some of the power that we've, in some cases, given up and lost on. And so I'm not sure if that's what you're going for in terms of what Netanyahu has kind of done for us or whatever, but I see that's just a domino thing that has happened since this, you know, well, October 7th, right, the Hamas thing. Is that what you're thinking about?
And also, like, reality red pills people just in general, and it has been doing for years and years, but I think especially here. And I guess my point is that the knock-on effect of Twitter being pro-free speech now is that that makes, you know, we're talking about institutions, organizations, they need funding, it needs very wealthy people to get involved. And I think that they will be much more comfortable getting involved if the discourse is now the way it is, rather than the way it was a year ago.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why it matters what happens on Twitter.
For sure. And it should be mentioned, a caveat, because people will bring it up and, you know, it bears to be said. It's certainly not perfect, right? There's still a lot of people banned. You know, Kevin was banned for some reason, right, recently. I think even he had the Occidental Observer account through there. But yeah, Jared Taylor's account, number of other people, they just still haven't been let on there. And of course, again, you know, Elon brought Alex Jones back, and you had that kind of weird overlap with, like, you know, Tate and Vivek Ramaswamy, and who else was in that call? Obviously Elon and Alex, right? Tucker wasn't on there, right? But, you know, there's that weird kind of crossover now. And I don't trust most of these people.
Some of the MAGA grifters.
Yeah, they're
right?
Certainly not going to save us, but still, just, and I, you know, Tate, I have huge problems with, but just to see that kind of crossover and the kind of the, you know, again, plenty of criticism of Alex Jones, right? But to kind of see Tucker doing a thing with him and then Elon going on there with him and kind of, you know, it's not that Alex Jones is a third rail, but the Sandy Hook thing was kind of big and all the lawsuits and stuff. And a lot of people were like, no, we're not going to do that. Even
he's
Elon
untouchable.
Was like that. Yeah,
right.
We're not going to bring him back, you know, but now it's like, he got kind of pissed. He got pissed off, I think, to be honest. He was down in Israel doing this weird, you know, standing in front of this,
look at this
stage
empty
crib
or something.
Like,
yeah.
This humiliation.
What do
ritual.
You think about this?
He comes back and then he's like looking at this and just like, God damn it. You know what I mean? It felt like he got angry after that. And it's like, I'll bring Alex Jones back, damn it. You know, I don't know if that's how it unfolded, but it felt like it. Like the more they push and try to tell him, right? He had that famous New York Times interview where he told them to go fuck themselves. These advertisers, you're going to threaten me with money? Piss off. You know what I mean? That's great. That's exactly the type of energy we need.
Yeah,
you know
it's not, and it's not about money for him. And I think a lot of these ideologues, it's not about money on the left either. Right? It's about
money. Of course not. It's never been about money. But an interesting point here is, as you say, there are all these, there are these types that you might call shysters,
grifters,
but
and
you and I and well, all three of us, of course, can remember 2016, 2015, and the alt-light. You know, some of them, their heart was in the right place. I'm not going to condemn all of them as shysters and fraudsters. But the point is that the general thing was, we'll sap off this alt-right energy and use it to create something much more cucked, much more kosher, and safe and profitable. Now, what's interesting is there doesn't seem to be an avenue for them to do that this time. Because, I mean, when Alex Jones talks about the Chi-Coms, Does anyone actually take that seriously? I don't know if anyone still does.
A few boomers, maybe, I think.
A few boomers.
Everyone else knows this is bullshit. Well,
that's what I was going to say, right? The alt-light refused, excuse me, to take up some of those talking points from the alt-right. I mean, if we look at a Charlie Kirk, or even as rotten as bad as Ben Shapiro's been, ironically, it was over the Israel thing where he's like, demographics is key, folks, and migration is not that great. And here he's for all the wrong reasons, but he's still there, right? And the Daily Wire talking points with like Matt Walsh and all this stuff is what was the alt-light. I'm not sure what the reason is, but it feels like they're trying. Maybe they're trying to get ahead of the trend, right? And they see where it's going, and they're like, okay, if we don't talk about this, we'll become irrelevant. And furthermore, it's not the truth as well. As we said before, we can wield the truth on our side. So they kind of are forced to do it of sorts. Now, it's bad if they take up the mantle and say, yeah, we're going to be, you know, we're going to run this now. We're going to ensure we sort this out and still kind of let us down or fail, you know, on the key issues at the end of the day. That's bad. But at least as long as we can kind of keep pushing, collectively speaking, and going in this direction, I'm sure it has had an influence, right? All those people pushing on these mainstream kind of conservative voices, right? It must be that it's so obvious now that even these people are like, okay, we have to start talking about this.
We have to admit that the Great Replacement is real. It's not a conspiracy, it's not a right-wing myth. It's actually real. Yeah. And that's the thing, the baseline now. Compared to 2016.
Exactly.
In 2016, the alt-right, you say, well, I just want justice. I'm not interested in white identity politics. I just want people to be treated well.
Yeah.
Now, it's definitely not that. They are openly saying there is anti-white politics, culture everywhere, and the Great Replacement is happening. And demographics matter. They matter politically, they matter culturally, socially, and whatever. Now, they're not at the point of saying, you know, Africans are less intelligent than Europeans. And they're not at the point of saying that, you know, about the JQ. Oh, well, not quite explicitly. But even there, things are opening up.
And some of them know it. I think some of them know these things. They just don't feel comfortable. Again, Matt Walsh knows these things.
Well, it depends on who you're talking about, obviously. Not across the board. But again, Charlie Kirk has been very interesting to observe for that reason, right? He's like, he's sitting there, he's talking about how Ketanji, Jackson Brown, and like a number of other people, right? He's like, no, they're diversity hires because they're dumb. He said that. And he didn't say blacks are dumb, but he wheeled out like three examples, and it was like three black women who obviously were like diversity hires. And he said, yeah, we're like, yeah, we know that you need to be, you know, you wouldn't have made it if it was, you know, an even playing field. If you didn't have affirmative action, you wouldn't be there. We know that because you're low IQ. So, you know, we're getting there.
The point is that would never have been said in 2016.
Exactly, that's right.
No, and now the discussion needs to go, okay, we're realizing these things. Well, what is the solution? Because they're so afraid of some of the solutions that we present, but that needs to become more more normalized now.
I think it's true.
It's not a dreadful thing. I mean, it's not an extreme thing. No. Other countries do this all the time. Mass deportations have happened all throughout human history. It's not, you know, just to look at it practically, they came here, they can leave here. It's not some sort of physical impossibility.
Yeah. Exactly. And we need to get all these people to get over the fear of being called a white nationalist to preserve our demographics and our culture and our European nations.
I think is that mostly over for those people, right? Mostly over?
Some. There's right. a few that still, well, wait, we can't do that. We know it's a problem, but we can't do that. That's Nazi. Alex Jones is always like still going on about Hitler and Nazis.
Yeah, it's like weird.
Oh, God.
It's just how can you be into conspiracy and connecting the dots and then still swallow this mainstream view when it comes to, you know, World War II, every aspect of it?
I've bought into one of the OG psyops. I was thinking about this, that they will not take them in as well. You know, people say that, well, it's never going to happen because they won't take him in. Well, so it's not only about that. It's not only about like international negotiations or whatever, if you have second or third or fourth generation migrants or whatever. It's frankly, in some regards, also creating a nationalist environment once again in our countries where we don't have to do anything against these people beyond taking our own side, standing up for ourselves, looking out for our heritage, and revive that nationalistic spirit in our countries, right? and make it obvious that that's what's happening. You know what I mean? A lot of these people, I think, will, not all of them, but many will start feeling very nervous. And also keep in mind, very different economic times that we're heading into, the whole geopolitical thing and the energy situation. Like, there's a lot of these things where, like, the bread and circuses type of thing, or the easy welfare for a lot of these people is going to be, I think, drying up as well. And that's certainly going to help us. It doesn't mean that things will be rosy for us there as well. It will be hard. But hey, look, all those things we can, it's not about any of that at the end of the day. Hard economic times, maybe that will be good for us. You know what I mean? So that's just kind of, it's a completely new set of circumstances that we face now, as opposed to just, you know, 5 years ago, I'd say.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, my previous guest was No Chance, who is Scottish, and we were talking about Scotland, and there's a whole woke machinery there. And it's very, I mean, the word woke can trivialize things. You need, it's a shorthand, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it is, I actually don't even know whether it's Zionist or the WEF crowd or both. I don't know who's behind it, but either way, it's there. And that's, it, when you're talking now about the narrative changing and the discourse changing, I can imagine that machinery in Scotland and in Ireland and other countries will actually start to seem like legacy machinery, where the gay, all of that installed this in different countries. But now it's starting to disintegrate. Now, I'm not saying that is happening. I'm just saying I can imagine a near future where that is the case. And so Scotland will still be operating on this this obsolete program for a while, even while the heartland is gone. It's no longer doing this. I can imagine that being the case. I'm not saying it is. I don't think it is the case yet, but I can imagine that coming to pass.
Isn't that situation in most, when new trends, sounds wrong, but you know what I mean? Like when things just start flowing in a new direction and moving in a new direction, you have an establishment there. They're like oblivious. They go to their own cocktail parties. They talk among their clubs and, you know, like Freemasons, whatever the hell they're hanging out at, some of these people, you know. And they just lost touch, and they just think more force, you know, control the narrative, push the boot down harder. And they think that's going to work, and they will just be losing while something new will grow up and, or, you know, take shape and surpass them, essentially. That's what I think will happen.
Yeah. Another point here is that the terms racist and anti-Semitic, white supremacist, those have been very effective weapons against our side. And I'm not going to say that I identify with the word racist, because I think it'd be like identifying with the word evil. I think it's ridiculous. It's not a good idea to do that. But obviously, I have to acknowledge that that word has been used against me, and these other terms as well. And I guess what...
Not me. I've never been called any of those things.
No, of course. You've been a good girl.
Do everything they tell me to do.
And believe everything they tell you to believe. But my point is that I think, again, as a result of this changing landscape, these terms, which were used to maintain that landscape in the past, those terms are now, they don't have the punch that they used to. They're so cliched through overuse, but also because of the changing situation in IRL. And because of this new thing in Gaza as well.
Yeah.
I don't think that these terms are going to have the weight that they used to have. What would you both say about that?
When your son or whatever, right, is beaten up by a pack of migrants, and some goddamn LGBTQ unicorn in some school is buying chest binders for your daughter behind your back or whatever, like, no one's going to give it. And maybe you have a hard time feeding your kid, whatever the new circumstances are here, but these are, you know, the new realities for a lot of people. No one's going to give a shit anymore. We're being, be that by design or whatever they have planned for us, at the end of the day, we are being driven out in almost every aspect out of our comfort zone. And that's going to cause a lot of people just not give a shit about any of this stuff, and so be it then. You know what I mean? That if that's the battle, you know, the new battlefront we're on, or the battlefield that we're on, so be it. I think it's not ideal, and yes, our people are hurting, our countries are hurting, all of that, but what are you going to do? I mean, it's we've allowed it to happen on some level. We've waited this long for whatever reason before we mobilized, and it just seems to be the nature of don't know, European man to just wait until like the last moments to like actually fight back against it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, when it comes to the terms, it's like they've broadened the terms so much that it's become meaningless. Like everyone is an anti-Semite now. You stand up for
that's
Palestine.
Real racist.
You're an anti-Semite. Like I can have conversations with just normal people on the street, and they're like, everyone's an anti-Semitic now. You know, breathe, and you're an anti-Semite. You know, and I don't remember having that conversation a few years ago or. Being a white supremacist or racist. I've been around normies. I've gone to some normie get-togethers. They don't know who I am. And I have these conversations and like, they don't flinch at these things anymore because I mean, black people can be white supremacists now, right? And supporting white supremacy and all this. It's just, it's meaning it doesn't have the same effect. It's like the trick has been used up. It's been played and a lot of people know that. And I can even tell based on reaching out, I notice a big difference, like reaching out for people for interviews or connections or trying to like, you know, get people on the show. I feel like it's really opened up more and there's a lot more people that are willing to like come on and talk to me. Whereas there was a period there, I felt like with a couple of years, it was like, wow, it's untouchable to all these people. They didn't dare come talk to me because, you know, they'd be written up about New York Times or something. But I feel like that's drying up. It's on some of its last legs.
You know I agree. I mean? There was a time when these terms, if applied to you, would really be injurious. And people, as you say, it's like a curse. This word has been, this label has been stuck on you. But I don't think it's true anymore. I mean, it used to be that it was a bummer to think that the papers are calling me a racist and a white supremacist and all this. It's kind of not great PR, you know? And now I think, well, who's going to care at this point?
No one cares. Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
It used to be you call that anti-white stuff and right away you'd get those labels. But now you have a lot of just normal conservatives are like, hey, this is anti-white. This is attacking white people. How is this okay? So again, normalizing these discussions and it is happening. And as we do that, it takes power away from these words and their tricks and we're exposing their double standards. And I think that's one of the great things about, you know, ban the ADL and the hashtag, man, they really showed their two faces, didn't they? One standard for Israel and for their people and another standard for ours. And a lot of people are starting to see through that and like, hey, wait a minute. Well, why are they behind, you know, well,
same thing with
banning
the
free speech?
The university thing. Look at that. Like we literally have like two decades at least of like abolish the white race type of
critical race theory.
The
yeah. Hate white. Hate the white man. Yeah.
No problem. And we've just let that go. We've just, well, okay, you know, white people are backing off and then it's DEIs and it's CRT and all these other things in those academic environments. And then the slightest little not even a direct criticism of like
Jewish people, but the state of Israel.
Yeah, state of Israel and you know, pro-Palestine. And it's basically like a genocide all of a sudden. Yeah. That's what they call it in Congress. Right? It was like, I forget what the logical kind of, what do you call it? The chronology of that was, but when the Stefanik, the clip that went viral with her, like, will you condemn, or like, is it harassment to call for Jewish genocide or something like that?
No one's called for that. Like, they're just making this up.
I think so. I think they equate what, from the river to the sea with that or something like that. And it's like, well, that was started by Israel, right? It was the Likud party that was behind that.
Just on that, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Did you see that clip? It was shared around on Twitter. I think you did share it, Henrik. And it was some American actor and a woman
and his
singing
fiance.
That song.
Yes.
And the guy was, he looked like the Happy Merchant meme.
I did not see this. I missed it.
Look more stereotypically like the sleazy Jew. The pervy Jew.
It's the guy in that Netflix show, Henrik.
I've
like blocked it out because I just.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, yeah. The big mouth, the big fish mouth. Yeah, yeah. I know exactly the actor.
Stranger Things or whatever.
Brett Gelman, right? Isn't that his name?
Yeah.
Brett Gelman, I think it is. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yes, exactly. But the point is,
I'm going to see if I can guess it because if I can play it, it was so funny.
Yeah, they're saying from the river to the sea means you want to kill me or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, no, this is like a Palestinian, you know, freedom song, right? But then when it's a kill the boar, all those same people go, oh, no, they're not actually saying kill the boar. It's just a freedom song. It's a liberation. Yeah. They're talking about a political movement, but not in the case of from the river to the sea.
Yeah. And it's just a blatant, just I mean, I know they don't care. I know they just, but
they don't care about double standard, but it's good when they just show it blatantly, yeah, when it's because so you can obvious, point you know what I mean? At yeah. that and I be know. Like, hey, wait a minute here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's incredible. The things that have come out of this. And I think a lot of people are noticing those kinds of things. The noticing is on levels, you know, previously unknown.
It's also shattering this whole levels. Remember when I had Ben Shapiro on back in 2014, we were talking about who controls Hollywood. And I told him Roseanne Barr was talking about, you know, Jews. And he's like, oh, she's just crazy. She's just this crazy conspiracy theorist. And it's just liberal Jews. You know, it's nothing organized. And it is interesting to see how many liberal Jews are showing their support for Israel now. Right. And they're like, also, oh, turns out a lot of them are closeted Zionists or they like, harbor those. Exactly.
Like Brett Gelman. Look at the UK, the activists like David Aronovich. What's the other? There's another David, right, that was exposed. He was like, I'm now in Israel. I feel safe here. What's do you remember his name was? That activist. Anyway, there's another guy.
I mean, BlackRock for crying out loud. And we're seeing all these corporations. And then it's like, oh, wait a minute. They have tons of support. Or yeah. They're just too afraid to speak out against it because they feel like what?
But, going back to Ben Shapiro thing real quick, though. What happened there is that he just blamed, well, they're just liberals, right?
That's what he
but
told
what, me. But what has happened since that time, too, in those years, is we have these great accounts out there. Obviously, Adam Green is big on this, but even like See Through It All, and there's a number, there's some I'm forgetting. But they link up these clips of like Orthodox rabbis talking about
conservatives, Jews.
Right?
Yeah.
So you get it from, you know, both ends where the classic Ben Shapiro defense would just be like, well, they're just, you know, it's nothing to do with their religion or the ethnicity. They're just liberals and they've lost. And it's like, no, that all that true. Stuff has come out. And it's just like, they're working in the same direction. Will you look at that?
Occasionally get some renegades like Ron Unz and a few others, but that's not the norm.
You can count them on one hand.
Yeah.
Norman Finkelstein, Gilad Atzmon, Israel Shamir.
Yeah, I think that's all people have come on your show. Yeah.
Maybe there's just a few others, right? But still, that's great.
Well, so. Here, I've got it. So,
you got it?
Okay. Well, I saw that smirk. Just queuing it up.
It's so stereotypical.
I can't wait.
If you heard that this guy was a child molester or a porn producer or any number of seedy, vicey things, you wouldn't be surprised. Just look at him. Here it is.
From the river to the sea, that means you want to kill me. From the river to the sea, yeah. That means you want to kill me. From the river to the sea. That means you want to kill me.
Arrogant and condescending. Ugh, like, you stole their land. Like,
yeah.
This guy goes on and on about colonialism and evil white people. We've played the clips, but it's totally fine when they go there and they're like actually colonizing in modern day and actually like genociding people and torturing them and killing little babies. Then it's all fine. It's all fine when we do it.
Yep.
But let's talk about white people hundreds of years ago when we were like the nicest, friendliest colonialists ever.
And this gets us to the thing where how can they continue to feign this moral superiority after what has been done, what you know, the Israeli government have done and the IDF have done in Gaza? I mean, I guess they can. You know, the hypocrisy is not exactly unknown to them, but other people are going to be able to use that against them is the point.
I mean, ultimately, as long as they have power, right, then it doesn't matter. But the thing is, you're not with those types of lies, and as obvious as they are, and ironically, again, you know, to reiterate that point, with the type of demographic changes that they have helped, many of them, and a disproportionate amount of their activists have helped to bring about, that's changing. That's why they're losing the support the lower, you know, ages you get. And that doesn't mean it's great, you know, that's great for us. Now we can have these allies with all these Muslims. That's not going to happen
either.
They're
not allies either.
But I'm saying at least that power grip is coming to a close. You know what I mean?
Most of the world was out there protesting against Israel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, again, the
most non-white nations are against it.
And it's for all the wrong reason. These people, they see Israel as a white supremacist country. It's a, as you said, Lana, it's a colonialist country, and therefore, you know, it needs to be destroyed. But so basically, the anti-white rhetoric has been so hardcore within these academic university environments that it's
hitting them in the face now.
Exactly, just spilling over.
And then they're like, hey, wait a minute. There's a difference between Jews and like white people. Now they're saying that, right?
While some of them, like some of the conservatives are like, whoa, this woke stuff has kind of gone out of control. It just happened one day for no reason. All of a sudden, wokeness
is here. And like Greenblatt, that whole clip, I did a video about him, and then he was complaining about oppression Olympics. Well, you helped put oppression and Olympics on the top. But he was complaining because Jews were no longer on the top of the pyramid with all this stuff. And he was complaining about that.
Yeah. So again, it's like that meme with the guy on the bike, you know, like sticking it in his wheel. He falls over and like, my last wish, I curse white people. You know, it's your fault.
Yeah, but that's what drives me nuts. I see some people are like, no, we have to ally with these Palestinians. You know, they're, you know, red pilled on some of these things. No, they come to our countries and they're horrible. They come to Sweden, they come to Europe, and they're just incredibly anti-white. They see us like the state of Israel. You know, they don't see any difference between, you know, Zionist oppressors and us. Yeah. And they come and war against us and are like vehemently anti-white in our countries. No, we don't want them there. No, they're fine in their own countries. We don't want, want them in our country.
No. Otherwise,
impossible. They can go to some other Muslim country, and even other Muslim countries don't want to take them.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're far more racist than we are. I mean,
they are. That's what I was trying to say earlier. Was it's like
within Islam, the racism lives, always, like
all the other races are racist. You know what I mean? That's just what it is, right?
Like, they actually don't like you just because of the color of your skin.
Kufar or an outsider or whatever. Yeah,
they don't know about the crime stats. They just don't like the color of your skin.
They have not read up on things. They don't know. They don't even know the power of the memes. They just say it because you're black.
Is the whole inversion thing where white people are called racist when we are the least racist.
Literally, we're like dying of tolerance. We're ending our civilization because of.
But again, this is. I mean, we've been lamenting this for years. But the lying of it all, the dishonesty. But again, I think that too, and I don't want to be too optimistic here, but I think even that is becoming unsustainable because the demographics. I mean, everywhere now. There's hardly any town or village in Britain, I'm sure it's the same in America, that doesn't have some diversity. Mm. And rarely is that a positive for that town or village. So there's no longer that mystique around diversity that there was 20 years ago or even 5 years ago. So that too, I think, is helping us. And we always said this, that the reality will red pill people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's happening. That in one way, you're right. They're doing the job for us, right? But our job is to
undo all that.
Yes, absolutely. But also, you know, the way to undo that is you need more of your people's support. That's just a fact. It's not that we need everybody, but we need, you know, having more people, having people with means and resources, and again, institutions, institutional power, all that stuff. Just needs to come over to our side and realize this is not working anymore. And again, going back to what we mentioned before, I'm seeing some of these accounts now that before they were just like, oh, look at this, you know, crazy Muslim, like, I don't know, whatever, like, you know, going after some girls or he's pooping on the street or whatever there was. Now it's like we, you know, some of these accounts like Radio Genoa and stuff, and I know they're kind of bad on the Zionist stuff, but whatever. They're like,
send them back.
Yeah, they're like, these people need to leave our countries. Like, there's a distinct difference in rhetoric here as well. Yeah. So again, it's drifting in our direction. It's being pushed in our direction to take whatever view you want that, but it's happening, and it's not going to be that, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, now we've talked about it. So now we're fine. The reason we're talking about it is because it's having effects on us in our countries, in front of everybody, in our faces. And that's not going to stop. It's not going to be like get
better. Well, that's why these discussions are coming out, because whites are becoming a minority in so many places. And so the reality of what that looks like and what those experiences actually are is starting to set in for a lot of people. So it's like, oh, now we can. Oh, yeah, those people were right. Let's start having these conversations. Well, but I don't want to live like this. Right?
It's like a child or a toddler. You can tell them all day long, like, this is going to happen. but they don't listen or do anything about it or change their ways until they've experienced it or done the mistake.
And that's because they saw some TV show of how wonderful diversity was, and one of each are out lunching together and at the bar together, but that's not the reality at all.
No, it's very different. It's
Definitely.
In Europe, it's going to have to like, if you came in between this and this period, you know, you no longer have residency or citizenship. You have to go back.
And it's all about laws, but we literally just could be like, okay, we're getting out of the UN Global Compact for Migration. just get out of it. Get out of the EU, whatever. And you say, no, in fact, the people didn't vote for these policies, as you said, Lon, during this and this period. Mm-hmm. And so new decree, a new law, whatever, new policy is issued in the country. And we can do this orderly and be fair and nice. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it's literally just about to think that we can't solve this, you know, I mean, is to diminish ourselves. You know
exactly.
I mean?
And it's like people think naysayers automatically, well, that's Nazism, or you want to exterminate people. They always go to extermination for some reason. It's like, no, we can just get them out. We can just, okay, take back your residency. You need to go home now. And by the way, when you are a refugee, that's how it used to be. Like when the war's over, you go back home. Yeah. No one's going back home anymore. They need to start going back home.
Yep. Well, and again, here we go again, right? But then we circle back to Israel, Zionism, and all the wars,
creating
and
the
Middle East, the neocons.
They are showing a certain example of xenophobia. You know, they're actually ethnically cleansing people that they don't want to be living alongside.
Yeah.
So again, how, if that's the moral example, the, you know, God's chosen people, the light unto the nations or whatever, well, you know, it's a pretty flavorsome example. You know, they just kill them. They're massacring them. They're slaughtering them. They're destroying their cities. They're killing the kids. You know, none of us have advocated anything even close to that extreme.
No.
Or ever would. So all we're talking about is an orderly withdrawal of these, well, removal of these people, deportation of these people from our countries. Now, I'm not delusional about this. I don't think it could be done with entirely peacefully, because a lot of them will resist. They don't want to go back to Botswana, and I can understand. But then the solution, there's a solution there as well, which is that we can make life better in Botswana.
They're going to want colonialism, right?
Well, I mean, the other thing, look, and I'm not saying it's not that we need to, you know, buy them off, is that the term, or like bribe them.
We do in some cases.
Well, look at the aid. First of all, like, look at the trillions and trillions of aid from Western countries.
The UK is giving Nigeria money to take people back. Right. And was it in the UK jails are so full of, you know, foreigners, right? Mm-hmm. That they're like paying countries to take back this trash element that's sitting in our jails. We're literally, the UK is literally giving these people, these criminals, home countries money to take back murderers and rapists. What a waste.
Well, Turkey, same thing with Erdogan. Here's his deal. You're going to keep back the migrants, right? Here's billions of euros. And then, of course, he's just like, no, I won't do that. And he lets them in anyway and just stabs us in the back. But the point is that what I'm saying is we don't have to do that. I'm not saying that that's what's going on. But at the same time, there are so many, and I hate to, it's not that I'm putting this in the, like, in the hands of, like, technology and progress and stuff like that, but I'm saying that's just one side effect of this, that, like, you look at some of these African, I mean, you've seen it, Lon, some of the, this is this big city in Nigeria, whatever, it's like, it looks fine.
Yes, there's some areas, like, I've been through Africa, there's some areas that are great, thanks to colonialism, and so, you know, yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Not saying they don't have problems, or like, there's, whatever, but I'm just saying it's like, look at Paris and stuff. But isn't that wasn't that one of the things now that happened? It was like all these migrants were coming to like New York and Chicago and stuff and said, the American dream is I'm going back home now.
It's such a shithole, right? Even the, what was it?
Maybe shithole countries. It's just what we need right about now.
And like our turtle.
And I'm saying there's an aspect there of like, you know, yes. And again, it's kind of cringe as I'm thinking about it, but like, yes, there is automation. There's kind of a, as bad as global homogenization is, that's just right now at least, and that could all fall apart tomorrow. But there's an aspect of that where it doesn't kind of, will it really matter where you are? There's a kind of a, it's becoming a lot of the same, and that's bad. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't like that either. But I'm just saying, as a side effect to all the problems that we're facing, if we have issue or if we tighten up a little bit in our countries and like make things a little bit more, as I said, a nationalistic environment or whatever, and it's for whatever reason, more technology or, you know, shit's being done, you know, on behalf of us with like AI technology, I don't know, things are happening on that front, might be more comfortable for them in some other countries. You know what I mean? And that's just, that's something I'm just saying, we shouldn't rely on that. And that's not going to fix it for us. We still have to do the hard work and the legwork, but I'm saying that will not impair us. That's still something we can use to our advantage at the end of the day, right? Whatever works, works. And I don't care how we do this or in what order or what do we begin with. It's like, I don't care. Just get it done.
And the problem is, I think that white charity is used up and we should just stop because we can go and make their countries better, but then the moment we leave, it's all going to fall apart again. You know,
we'll build in these AI robots and they'll just put them in the pods. They'll put the VR headsets on, intravenous cheese,
yes,
and you know, some kind of singular cell protein, right? And we're good.
That's a nice solution there.
Matrix, right?
Let me get their population down a little bit.
You can go wherever you want instantaneously. Here, get in this pod, put on this headset. I got some bug juice here for you too.
All right. Well, one thing, based on a lot of what we've been saying, I wanted to bring it back to is, obviously, things are falling apart for the regime, powers that be, and that's going to continue. And as that continues, they're going to fight back. Now, Elon Musk, and I'm sorry to, I know he's not the be all and end all.
We know all that.
As a caveat, but it is a central point in all of this, because without free discourse, it'll be back to the mainstream media. It'll be as if the internet effectively didn't exist. The internet will just be a way to bolster what the mainstream media says. So we obviously don't want that. We need freedom of speech online. And Twitter, for now, is probably the main place for that. So they're going to target Twitter. And obviously that's going to be the ADL as part of that. The ADL has, I think, itself suffered a huge amount of PR damage over the last year. That's another thing as well. But they're going to target Twitter via the advertising. Elon Musk has said that could kill Twitter. So obviously the three of us are not experts in big business and high finance and whatever. But what would you say is going to have to happen here in order to keep Twitter free, like a free speech? Because I think it's going to be... I wouldn't be surprised if Elon Musk has to start his own bank.
Excuse me. Yeah, I was going to say, well, at least for a while, maybe he has to just run it for a loss and he would be
use his own money to do it,
right? I mean, if he really believes in it. But at the same time, that's not sustainable. You got to have some way of doing those things. But you can just, because you've seen that now with like the, what are some of the big, these woke, you know, again, cringe to use, but yes, it's still true, right? Woke companies and the Disneys or whether it's IBM or whatever it is that jumping ship more recently, like there are boycotts against them, right? And they're going in this distinct political direction. And a lot of people don't like that. And it's this seesaw or like, a scale basically. And at some point, you know, to cross that threshold, to make the sides tip over, at some point, like, yeah, there's things that are going to suffer. That's a battle to take that. But at some point, if that could be done, you can actually tip it. And you would have businesses that are like, oh, things have changed, or these things are not seen as bad things to talk about, or like, oh, he believes in free speech. Well, that's a good value. We believe in those values. We might not agree with everybody, but hey, we have to have, you know, as long as it's legal speech, then that's fine. Those things need to be normalized, and then you hopefully will have businesses that are like, well, it's popular. You would assume that is that kind of trade-off, right? Like, okay, he's not, you know, doing what Facebook and YouTube and some of these others are doing, and hopefully for that reason, people will come to the platform. It will be popular. You will have eyes on the thing. I think, didn't he tweet out the other day? X out? Oh, gosh. that it was like the most engagement on the site ever or something like that. I think it was like,
That's undeniable. And the thing is, a lot of business will come there.
That's what I'm saying.
No, of course. A lot of these big corporations that were like, oh, we're pulling out, they were putting most of their money in Instagram anyway, not to X and Instagram and Facebook. What he needs to do is reach out. There's a lot. Look, America has been made on small businesses, right? So it's like if advertising could be opened up, it could be a lot. Well, it is a lot of smaller and medium sized businesses and not relying on huge corporations. That could keep Twitter going.
That's the thing. These are huge clients. It's just massive amounts of money. Boom. One guy. I mean, it's not quite, but like it's one channel you deal with. Boom. That's it. You get money. You
know? And that's why a lot of smaller and medium sized businesses don't advertise on there too. I think they feel like intimidated or money.
Well, I'm not
or
surprised. You know, right. I use the Twitter API, or I did. And they've made it more complex. They've changed it all. So
yeah, they've restricted it a little bit more, right?
I didn't have time to get to grips with it. So I have to do all the announcements manually on Twitter, which is a bummer. But anyway, I was using the Twitter API, and they've now introduced this new version of it, and it's something like $500 a month proper. I mean, it's insane. Yeah.
It needs to be more attainable for the smaller guys.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that will make a big difference.
Well, recently they need a tier system. Like, what is your, you know, what's your level of your business? Is it, I mean, is it the same for everybody? Like, IBM pays 500 and then the small business guys?
No, I think there are several tiers. Top one is like 10,000 a month or something. It's just astonishing. Yeah. It's obviously for some huge corporation.
Right.
They need one that's like $50 a month or something like that.
Right.
And just enables a small company to pump out adverts and whatever. Because that's and notifications, notices, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
That's obviously what should be done there. And as you say, I think that's actually a very interesting idea. Because remember that, because people might be skeptical about that. They might say, well, small businesses and so on, that's not going to generate enough money to look after it. But remember that Google did Google Ads and get AdSense and all that. That was how they built up.
You got to make it more granular, right? Localized, depending on where you are, your target, things like that, right? Isn't that what they did with Google?
Yeah. It was very clever. I mean, it made sense. It was the kind of thing that was a sensible thing, and you think, why did no one do this before, sort of thing.
He's going to have to think outside the box a little bit and do something different.
Like the CIA did with Google.
I'm sure. Not make it just friendly for these big corporations, but more attainable for everybody else. And for him, I think he's willing to lose some money because it's not about money for him. It's about free speech. Like when he told all these advertisers, fuck yourself. He's like, you think you can...
It's about Neuralink.
You think you can blackmail me through money? Like, he doesn't... It's not just about money. It's not about money with this guy. Yeah. So,
and that's what we've needed all along. He's rich enough that he can be like that. What we've needed all along is white people who weren't obsessed with profit, who did care about other things than money. Because after all, that's what our opposition have been like all along. I mean, they've made money from what they've done, but the primary goal was always to destroy us.
Yeah, it's literally like as you destroy, you take their resources or you use that. You make money on like being destructive, That's what they've done. But I'd say that to the detractors. You know, bring up that facetiously, but that's still a part of it, right? That's why I'm saying I don't trust a Musk, right? He has this, everything happen. As you said before, he needs to start a bank. Well, isn't that part of it? He actually wants to run financial services through X, right? The app and all that. Yes, you have the Neuralink. You have the Starlink thing. You have AI development with these the car technology in Tesla. He's building these robots now. Like it's like, who is this guy? Why does he still have these contracts with the government, NASA, the boring company?
Well, we'll see what happens with those, huh?
Right. I'm saying all that's there and it's on the table and stuff you have to take into account. However, having said those things, and again, I don't trust the guy, but if he all of a sudden like. What's really the reason for him to talk about like demographics or like
what does he stand to gain?
It's very interesting that to me at least at this point make it seem unless there's some other thing going on where again they're trying to get ahead of the curve or something. He genuinely just is like concerned about these things.
I think people can be far too conspiratorial and they think everything's a psyop.
That's tiring too. I'm with you.
And it's like. I understand the mentality. There are two reasons you would think like that. One of them is that you're just that paranoid and you think, and you're just genuinely convinced of it. The other reason is that you're thick. And you think that this is what an intelligent person thinks, that everything's a science, everything is that complicated, it's that deceptive. And I've known people who really weren't very bright, but they defaulted to that extreme worldview just because they thought that was intelligent. It's a thing. But anyway, don't need to go on about that. It's just an interesting observation.
Yeah.
Why no, people reach
I
these
agree with yeah, people it's, can be people can be hard on you them, don't have I think,
to,
on us.
Again, it's not that you have to put all your eggs in that basket or say that this will be some fix for us, and it won't. But I'm saying like if a side effect of all of this is that it's like moving positively in our direction, great. You know what I mean? Why exactly. Not? You know what I mean? And if we can take something positive out of that for as long as we can, do it. But it's only as good as the latest development or news or event or whatever you want to say. Like if all of a sudden things change and it's bad, okay, well then stop supporting it or, you know, turn your back on it or whatever.
Yeah,
you got to be dynamic. You know what I mean?
Then give up on it. But right, there's no reason to just assume in advance that everything is the Fed's and so on. Now, what I was going to say was that people used to say this about Trump, that Trump has just controlled all this, is fake. He's part of it. He's a part of the swamp and all that. I don't think that was ever true. I mean, yeah, sure, he was off that milieu. He's involved in big business and so on. But I do think that he was I think that they were more scared of him than they needed to be. I think that they saw him as a genuine threat and at any rate, a symbolic threat. I don't think he was ever going to do much. I think that I got too optimistic about that. Various other people did as well. But my point is that I don't think he was a fake. I don't think he was controlled opposition. I think they controlled him once he was in the White House, actually, but not when he was the opposition.
Yeah, a lot of chains on him, yanking him in different directions and, you know, the Kushners and all that shit.
And I think it's the same with, and you can see this genuine loathing of Trump among many people, not just the idiot 20-year-old SJW. Loads of very senior people, the genuine loathing of Trump. And I think it's similar now with Elon Musk, where a lot of people assume that he's controlled opposition, whatever. But I don't think, if so, I don't think it makes sense. Why would he do this? Why would he open up the discourse? Why would he let
lot to,
back?
He has a lot to lose.
A lot to lose.
Why would he let me back onto Twitter, let alone Alex Jones and so forth? It doesn't help him. It doesn't actually help anyone but our side.
You have this one, and as you talk about that, I agree with you, but then you have this one other thing, right, where you have a whole swath, I feel, as well, of the conservative side. It doesn't mean that it's, you know, bad what's happened with these developments of them picking up talking points or whatever you want to call it from us or, you know, people like, you know, this sphere, but they see that wokeness is bad because it's waking white people up. And they basically want to slow it down, right? There's some of those people like, whoa, whoa, it's like, you got to take it easy. Who was it that had that classic? Well, it was Nigel Farage, right? I'm not sure if that's what he meant with it, but the comment was like, to integrate people, you got to do it slowly over time. You know, it's like, you got to replace them slowly so they don't notice. That's basically
what they don't become Nazis or something.
Yeah, exactly. So they're like, they're very concerned with the developments. And so they say, they're saying to the leftists, like, you need to slow down. Kissing.
But
right?
Elon's not slowing classic. It down.
What's his name again?
He's ramping.
The Russian Jewish guy in the UK, the trigonometry.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Constantine Kissin, right? That's a classic example, right? He's like, he's kind of on the, he's on this conservative, nationalistic-esque right thing, you know, trend or whatever. But he's generally, and we've shown tweets with him like that, where he says the reaction to it is what he's more afraid of than the actual, like, whoa, like, you're telling me, like, snipping off, you know, the ding-dong of young boys or whatever, like, forcing gender ideology on kids or telling white kids that they're bad for being white. Oh, that's not that scary. It's when these whites wake up, you see. That's what the real danger is.
I don't think Elon fits in that bracket, though, or in that tier. He's always kind of been a free... He's been a free-range maverick. They don't like him because he's very wealthy and he's gone rogue. It could be very possible that just because he's interested in robots and Neuralink and all these things, it doesn't make him a bad guy. What if he has, you know, he's thinking like...
He's a spark.
He's curious about... He loves all this sci-fi stuff, but he knows that if it gets in the wrong hands, it's trouble. He's made that known about like Microsoft and their AI system, what they're doing. So it could be that he's trying to get ahead of the game too, of making these things. And he believes in just total unbridled free speech, and I think he does. I think he's a maverick in that way. I think he has gone. Let Jared Taylor back on.
I know it's the lawsuit stuff, or Kevin McDonald too, but of course that.
You know, and he's in a hard place, Hendrick. We've talked about that too. He's trying to be as probably as edgy as he can while walking the line. You know,
I agree,
you have to a certain extent.
Yeah, but I think the fact that he let Alex Jones back on, I think he's, and he's talked about lifetime bans being wrong, being immoral. I can't remember the term. Yeah. I think he is going to let Jared Taylor back on and Nick Fuentes.
I know it's the lawsuit thing with Jared, right? That the fact that they sued Twitter. So there's like a no-no, like a, you know what I mean?
But that was before his time.
No, I know that. But I'm just saying that's like a Twitter thing that's just there for that reason, I think. I'm not sure.
But it's a new company now, right? So maybe that'll change.
We'll see what happens. But, you know, again, it's just like this flip-flopping, you know what I mean? And then he brought on Yaccarino, which is like, what's this about? And you try to save face with advertisers and stuff. So it's this constant back and forth. But I think that could just be, as you said, I mean, he's a Spurg. He's autistic or something's going on with him. He might be highly intelligent, or he might just be faking that. I'm not sure, but he's done something. He's been a very sly businessman. I should say that too, though. I mean, he outmaneuvered the people to actually develop the Tesla. He didn't do that, right? The Tesla Roadster was another guy who developed that. The PayPal thing, same there. He sold that. He got in there. He elbowed his way into positions of power and ousted a lot of the other people, you know, leadership, you know, people or whatever. But again, be that as it may, if he is the most immoral person on the in the world or whatever. If there are things that are done that are positive and moving for us and moving things in our direction, all right, fine, so be it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying, and my dad always used to say this too, men that are really, 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 really rich have done certain,
dirty things
to get there, yeah. Generally. You know, they're a certain type of person. Yeah, so I understand that what rich man probably hasn't done some of those things. But hey, if he can see the light and come around to our side and further discussion or even
by accident help us.
Yeah.
Then exactly.
A side effect of it.
Yeah, side effect. An unintended consequence of it. It's like, okay, well, fine. That, good.
Then we have to ride that wave and don't like shit all over him all the time.
Exactly. The point is it doesn't matter anyway, right? We have no power over him. I doubt he will hear this or any of the other conversations. Maybe not. Well, maybe he would. Look, maybe that will happen one day. I'm not saying that, considering where things are going and whatnot. But the point is, he's heard talking points from people like us and other people in our sphere now that's come to his ear or through a meme or whatever, right? On Twitter, that's passed up the chain of some of these other accounts that have, you know, and it's bad and cringe. Some of those are like end wokeness or whatever. But, you know, they talk about white demographics and stuff. And I think it wasn't the guy Jewish or something running it. But, you know, the point is Elon retweets those memes and he replies to some of these. Hey, replied to Keith Woods, right? Things like that.
That's good.
You know what I mean? That's great.
Yeah, it's good. So, it's almost like people on our side just don't know how to recognize success.
Take a victory where you can. And these things get printed in the press and people see it and they're like, well, if this guy's into it. Well, what's there? You know how people are. They follow. They need things to be like normal and kind of user friendly to be able to talk about it, right?
Yeah, and again, I know we don't need everybody on our side. You know what I mean? It's not about that, but it won't hurt. You know what I mean? It's like you can have a small ragtag, band of rebels doing everything, but if you have more people on your side, if you have more meat and resources. Good, you know what I mean? So,
and also someone like that who can like anonymously step in and donate like a bunch of cryptocurrency and be like, here, we're gonna help you hire 50 people, go to town, you know what I mean? Like that's what we need to see happening moving forward.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Damn it, the left, like all the resources the money they spend.
Yep.
I mean, I just got contacted from this company in France France's biggest TV station, and they wanted to fly to Idaho to interview me for this segment they're doing. It's like the money they
brought
have.
You by Pfizer. Like,
you mean like I'm interviewing you right now?
Exactly. Amazing.
No, they got to have their cameras in place and all. You know, you can't, you know, don't, you know, can't trust any of those people. But the point is, Yeah, they have fucking Pfizer money. You know what I mean? Like, that's mainstream TV channels that, you know, drugs and there's so much money there. You know what I mean? And as you said before, was like, yeah, it's literally created by, like, you know, destruction and death in that case. I don't know, Pfizer stock is down apparently like 48%.
Built on bad karma. Still,
it's bad on, yeah. Built on, you know, killing.
That karma does come back around. If it doesn't in this life, it's going to in the next. Absolutely. I believe that.
Yep.
Well, let's hope that Alfred Bourla gets what he deserves. So
that reptile throat.
Oh, yeah. What the hell was that?
Holy shit.
God.
All right,
guys.
I'll go to the super chats now. Rogue Trader says, great to see Red Ice back a millennial. Merry Christmas. Yes, it is. And thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you as well, Rogue Trader. Pure Nomad says, politely late. I feel like I've watched Henrik and Lana all my life.
Really? That's nice. That's cozy.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's nice. Dharma Initiate asks, how do you two feel about vaccines? After COVID, I've become totally anti-vax and anti-pharma. Well, my God, Dharma, Red Ice were flying the flag for the anti-COVID side all throughout that debacle. So,
and even before that, even before this new weird medical technology became available, we're like, hey, you should look into this thing with giving young kids like 32 shots first thing. Maybe it's not that great.
Yeah.
No,
we've been not a fan of the vaccine. Of
mainstream medical establishment. And I think we've been, you know, with every development over the last 2 years,
proven
three
right.
years, yeah, I think we've been proven more or less right on that front. Brunson.
Definitely.
Look at the excess deaths in the UK. Anyway, I'm not going to go into the thing. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And your kids don't need it. This was it, 4, 5, 6 pages in America of the vaccine schedule. It's insane. Just tear it up. No thanks.
All right. Open Borders for Israel says, my boss is from Indonesia. They were colonized by the Dutch, but they did very little development compared to other countries that were colonized. My boss actually complains that they didn't do enough colonization to develop Indonesia. Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
The point is, you can never make these people happy.
No. So, you know, white strike worldwide. Well, yeah, let's just pull back our money, our resources.
Sorry to interrupt you, Alan, but wasn't there that one country that were like a large segment of the population like wished that the British, or was it the French, or I think it was
Jared Taylor tells this story about,
yeah, right, they're like, oh, we were never colonized, look at how bad things are. It was like one of the neighboring countries, you know, like
I can't remember, it was one of the African, like, I don't think it was Nigeria,
I don't think so.
Oh, it was, God, I can't remember. But yeah, he's told that story quite a few times.
Yeah.
But look, I've heard it from other people as well, that you know, they wish that white people were still in charge, some of them, because things were better then.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It makes perfect sense.
Yep.
I feel like we're loved more so
supremacy by the win, folks.
We're loved more so by non-whites who don't live in our countries. Why is that? Could it be because someone is subverting these people within our countries to hate us? Yes.
Yeah, it's all in your mind.
Don't know about that, Lana. Open Borders for Israel also says Pakistan is kicking out 1.2 million Afghanis. The Dominican Republic built a wall between itself and Haiti, and it's kicking out the Haitians.
Yeah.
If third world countries can manage migrant crises, Western countries can
hell
as well.
Hell yeah.
100%.
It's just a matter of will.
Yes. Yeah, political
will. If street shitters can do it, so can we.
Leadership and willpower. That's it.
I mean, Pakistanis, they don't even take in their, or like India doesn't even take in their Pakistani bros. They can't even get along.
Well,
no, there's tremendous animosity.
Yeah, that's a huge problem.
Yeah, but they're they're the same people.
Fuck you, bloody, fuck you. Yeah.
I've been there. I've seen it. Like, they're the same people. They're just Muslim and Hindu.
Yeah. All right. Open Borders also says, love Red Ice. I can't always catch their show because of time differences in Australia, but keep up the good work, guys.
We could catch the replay.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be live.
No, I'm just joking.
But good, I think good. People, of course, and I often do that, but I think that people get a real kick from live streams.
No, that's true. It's a different, I agree. No, I was just making
it's always going to be a thing.
Yeah, I think it's the thing, like, they want to catch it live. There's a buzz about being there at the same time as everyone else.
It's true.
Okay, B. Dawson says, love Red Ice. Since you guys have been around for so long, what would you say was the darkest time period in the pro-European movement? That's an interesting question.
That is interesting. Mm. Darkest time. Jeez. I mean, either it's... That's personal, though. That's because of like what happened to us, kind of thing, right?
I know,
like
that's what I think.
I'm biased in that way, but it has to, frankly, it has to be the post World War II period. I mean, it's not even over. We're still reeling from the consequences of that, but at least it's like beginning to turn around. Has been the theme of the show here today, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah,
right?
But I think he means in your experience,
in our experience. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, personally, it's, yeah, this is like 20, what, was it 19, 20?
Was it 17?
Well, I was like the booted off.
20, it was like 2019, I remember, was when like a lot of banning and censorship, yeah, deplatforming, 19. Debanking. It was like, oh, shit, this is getting real.
Yeah. So if you talk personally, it would be that kind of period, you know, and because of an uncertainty of like, okay, are we going to survive this? Are we going to be here?
Yeah.
Are people going to support us? Now we don't have a large platform anymore. And I think we're proving,
that was dreadful period. I mean, I personally was very affected by that. You know, it was so stressful.
Yeah.
That was dreadful. Yeah. 2018, 19, that was when it was all really happening and people were losing YouTube, losing Twitter, losing Instagram, Facebook, PayPal, Patreon, and so on. And it was just decimation. And that's exactly what our enemies wanted.
And it was like, I remember where you're seeking out a new method or new platform, you're denied or instantly banned or something.
We were pre-banned, like
all the things, like all these different financial services.
Yeah.
And, you know, because of like the First Data payment processing thing, it's like basically all options are like off the table.
And then you learn how so few really control things behind the scenes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a terrible time. And then right after that, we had COVID. So I don't know. It would be difficult to choose. Personally speaking, in terms of how I was feeling, definitely 2018-19.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's right.
I think so too.
19,
but I think in terms of general mood, the worst period was 2020 to 21. That the COVID thing, I think, was just, it really did a number on everyone.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say there.
Yep.
Okay. Caesar himself says, long live Ragnar Henrik and the shield maiden Lana.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas and good Yule.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. Good Yule.
Yeah. And Robert says, y'all are the two streaming channels that brought me into this scene back in 2015-16.
Nice.
Hail Woes, hail Red Ice.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Yes. And then King of Hyperborea. I never know how to pronounce that. Good to see a fellow Nord. Where does Henrik think Sweden is headed? Some hopeful signs, but the right-wing parties are still cringe civnats.
Yes.
Saying some good things, but for the wrong reasons. Good Yule.
Good Yule. I've always been very positive, actually, but as bad things are. Just because of the mentality of the people, because I know that tide is going to turn. And when we're close, and we're going to get close, but we don't need everybody on our side, and if you have a lot of Swedes still that are like turning against this direction for simplicity's sake, start turning against that, going in our direction and starting to cooperate and pull in the same direction to change our country and to change our future, I think you can see lot of changes quickly, right? Mm-hmm. It's always been the case. It's very conformist. It's very this, like, everybody has to be in line, blah, 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 blah. And again, it's like that tipping scale, the scale I mentioned before, like once that tip comes and it becomes more socially acceptable to be, that's almost happened. I mean, it's not quite there yet. And they have a lot of the power. But again, just as a barometer, just the fact of like the Sweden Democrats, yes, there's problems. And again, just like Elon, they're going to fix it for us. But it's a barometer of the direction things are going. Mm-hmm. And even if they are like, oh, clearly they're not strong enough. Okay, well, then the people are going to demand more. And either they're going to have to force to step up or you're going to have other options coming in. Not that it's through politics. It's not. But the other aspect, look at all the great guys at these active clubs and even the Nordic Resistance, like they add the type of activism, the type of really strong nationalist scene that a country like Sweden has for its size, for its population. It's very healthy. Mm-hmm. As well, it's been very, very positive about that. There's many other groups. The Free Sweden is one of them, many other groups and stuff like that. We're gonna turn this shit around. It's just a matter of time. It's just how painful is this going to get? That's the big question. Like how much of we're going to suffer before like, okay, we've had enough. Now we're changing it. It's just a matter of time. Positive.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good optimistic, upbeat answer. Do either of you have a favorite Viking in history?
Skogultoste.
I'd be like, not really, but yeah, you do right.
Ragnvald. I'd say Skogultoste. He's actually one of these. He's a Westergothic guy. You know, they talk about Danegeld, right? It was one of the things we got from it was the Anglos and Saxons at that point, right? Well, the British Isles, right? And not many people know about him. They thought it was a Danish thing, but it turns out Skogultoste is one of the first one. He was born in Vestergotland, Westergothic lands, and he was one of the first one who did that. He's not much written about, but he's one of my favorite guys. I'm trying to always find out more about. It's hard with the historical records there, but I like that guy.
I guess mine's Henrik Palmgren.
How about I mean, the classic is like what's his name again? Yeah, it's so. What is his name? Ragnar. What's his name again? Ludbrok.
I remember when we were thinking of kid names. Right. He was like Ragnvald. I was like, Ragnvald. That's going to be really hard for people to say. I can hardly say that. Ragnvald, stop it right now. Ragnvald, come and eat your food. I don't know.
It's a strong name. We do a version of Beowulf. How about that? Boulevard, I think. Well, I think that was a Gothic name. For him. All right.
All right. And then finally, well, okay, this is a bit more of a downbeat question. Why wouldn't the regime use a based Elon as a way of steering the opposition? The Trump win turned out to be a massive loss, for example. Same for Brexit. Yeah, sure, Brexit was, I think, repurposed, as it were. Trump was neutered in office. Elon, why wouldn't they use a based Elon to steer the opposition? I understand the thinking here. I just don't think it actually works like that, because Elon isn't steering the opposite. It's not under his control in that sense, I would say. I think that he allows free speech, and then the discourse comes alive. And I don't think he's modulating where the discourse goes.
Mm-hmm. But, he's not even controlling himself, I think. I think he's real-time reacting to things that he's waking up to and seeing, which is kind of interesting. But even if that was true, I think you're right earlier, Woz. You said that the they're so scared of things just inching slightly. The idea of progress is it continuously moves in their direction no matter what. Like, it never stops kind of thing, right? And so as bad as Trump was, that was still, in their view, a backtrack. You could argue they called him a white nationalist. We got none of the white nationalism, but the system reacted like it was white nationalism, and hence the clampdown, right? And we talked about earlier that time period of censorship and stuff, kind of, you could argue, in a way, initiated because of that, right? They reacted like it was real. Like, here's a Nazi guy. We have to, we have to denazify, the West now, which is a big problem. But isn't it, I would still argue, isn't it true that because of those things, we now are where we are at? It's still drifted in this direction. Granted, it's a delayed reaction because people think, oh, here's our guy, kind of thing. And then, oh, he wasn't the guy. And then 4 more years go by or whatever kind of thing. And now ironically,
but all the sentiments, again now in 2024, all the support, all the things that are unleashed, that hasn't gone away. The people still hold those sentiments. They still want those things. Those desires are still there. Even if it was a guy who was put in place, he did say a lot of real things, right? Things that resonated with people, things that haven't gone away, things they can't put the lid on. It's like it's unleashed. So they always take a risk in doing that if they put someone there to kind of control the discourse. It's always a chance for them.
As I say, I don't think they are doing that. I think, and when Trump said something that you can't then roll back on it. It's like it's been said now. When he says he's a nationalist, that makes a lot of people think, okay, so nationalism is...
That's right.
That's just a tiny example. I'm not saying that's going to have a huge sea change effect. I'm just saying lots of little things like that occurred, and that will have an effect on people, on their sense of things. Mm-hmm. So, I agree.
Isn't it... quick addition to that, but Yeah, if it moves in our direction regardless, right? Which is a good thing. I'm going to lost my train of thought now. It was an important point I was going to make, and shit, it fell out.
Doesn't matter, as long as it goes in our direction.
Yeah.
Well, was I saying I was saying about Trump and the controlled opposition, they can't really do that because the little things that he said put people's reframed things for people.
If as long as the people don't stop with these people when they turn out to be frauds, and again, so the caveat here is like, oh well, that's happening all over now in 2024. Another 4 years will be wasted because I'm not like, you know, oh, we go Trump, you know, of course not. But I'm saying, it's, I think it, as long as people then say, well, that wasn't strong enough, and as long as people keep moving, these people that we look up to. I mean, look, Trump, like or not. Look at how kind of that unified a lot of people, right? Like a lot of things kind of just bubbled up to the surface because of that guy. But once, you know, he's
not, like a conduit that needed to be there.
That's what I'm saying. It's a greater force that's beyond some of these people that become kind of avatars. They become, you know,
a spirit moves
like a Mercury
them,
type figure. They become a channeler of something and even of a will of people of sorts. And again, Trump did turn out not to be that. But even so, like through that for a time, it felt like that. And then you move on. And it, as long as you keep moving forward, that's what I'm saying. As long as you don't stop and like, all exactly. right, well, we'll.
Well, we never put all our faith in one person. They're good for that time, for that place, for what needs to be said and done. And then you move on. I don't know anyone who's putting all their stock and faith in, yes, Elon's going to fix it. Oh, Trump's going to fix everything. No one ever thought those things.
I agree. I completely agree. I think it's a caricature to say that, well, we're not just investing everything in Elon Musk and he's the same. No one's saying that. So I think I'm not worried about it.
People stare themselves blind on some of the Q-tards and like the, you know what I mean? Like the, and there are some of those, obviously, granted, and kind of a lot of them.
Is Q still going? Is that still a thing?
I don't know, but you know, that has morphed, right? And it's still like, you know, he's going to fix things for us, whatever. But, you know, they're boomers. As long as we have the younger generations, we're fine.
Yeah.
I'm not to any boomers out there. Dashing. You're watching this, you're based. Okay, you're fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's the other boomers that we don't like.
Yes, those boomers.
Yeah. all right. So then finally, Cronin says, I too was awakened in part by red ice and woes. Thanks for persevering through the constant roadblocks. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being there for us.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's a nice thing to see. So, all right. Well, this has been great. I think everyone's enjoyed this, and I certainly have.
We have as well.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Well, I'll be back in half an hour with the final one for tonight, which is Der Schattenmacher. Yes. And in the meantime, Henrik and Lana, Red Ice, thank you for everything that you do. You're a real mainstay of the movement, and I think a source of comfort and reassurance and familiarity to countless people. So. Thank you for that, and thank you for appearing on Millennial 2023.
Thank you, Wills. Appreciate it.
Merry Christmas. Good Yule.
Good Yule to everybody, to you as well, Wills, everybody out there.
Thank you, and you too. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Find the info at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word.